This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is coming up to 6:07. You are with Kelvin and Hezril on the Evening Edition. And our first story looks at concerns surrounding ongoing political appointments. So the last time we touched on this in April, there were conflicting statements by ministers on whether non-cabinet MPs will be given special positions. But since then, 38 have been appointed to key government agencies, GLCs, and diplomatic missions.
That's right. And the latest ones have faced backlash on the use of government funds. MRB or Malaysian Rubber Board Chair Ahmad Nazlan Idris, who is also UMNO MP for Jerantut, was criticized by former Primary Industries Minister Teresa Kok after he announced that a 100 million ringgit rubber technology research center would be built in his constituency. She asked why there's an urgent need for a new project, especially since public funds should be used prudently given the state of the economy. The MRB chair, however, said that the project has yet to be approved by the authorities.
Well, nonetheless, that proposal was put forth anyway. So YB Theresa said that Malaysia already has several research centres in Selangor, Johor, and even in the UK. She added that history might be repeating itself as former MRB chairman and UMNO MP Datuk Wira Ahmad Hamzah also ordered a multi-million ringgit project in his constituency. It cost 44 million ringgit, went into debt, and remains unfinished.
So it's very interesting, actually, if you look at the makeup of the 39 appointees. So it's 38 because one of the appointees already has a cabinet position. Mm-hmm. So if we look at the composition, the number of people who have been appointed based on party actually corresponds to the party size in the coalition. So UMNO actually has the largest share of these special appointments at around 30%. And Bersatu has the smallest number of appointees. So it looks like it's sort of flipped versus the cabinet position. So that's quite interesting to note. And I think was one of the ways perhaps that UMNO was able to, you know, secure, favors from the Prime Minister in turn for this new grand coalition.
What can you do when you only have a majority of two seats? You can dangle these very lucrative positions in front of MPs who might be sitting on the fence. It is a spot of its own making. This is Perikatan Nasional's fault, essentially, right? They did it to themselves.
Right.
And you know, a while ago, when that statement was first made by de facto Law Minister Datuk Taqiyuddin Hassan, who said that all government MPs with no ministerial positions will be given GLC positions, it was then that I think some of the statements were like, well, we'll have to see what Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has said, if he'll say anything. But, well, nothing's been said so far. You know, he hasn't come out to address or to clarify that statement. But quietly and actually through, publicly rather, it's just been done, you know, nothing, no questions asked and no opportunities given for questions to be asked, right? Either through his addresses, speeches, or even in parliament. And I guess it's quite awful to see it happening at this point in time, right? We're expecting a huge impact on the economy because of the pandemic. And then we're also seeing problems where, well, and politicians saying, where, like, well, this country just doesn't have enough funds for some of the aid and welfare programs that we need right now. But then at the same time, you see MPs who are already getting salaries of over tens of thousands of ringgit, getting these cushy jobs. It's not sending a very good message. And, you know, sure, they're not breaking any laws, but it's unethical and downright immoral at this point in time to do something like this. What more even during normal times?
Right. On the other hand, though, I think it's quite important to note that Malaysia has had a long history of politics and business sort of mixing around. Since Tun M first became prime minister, I think there's been this system of political patronage and, you know, private businesses mixing in. So to an extent, this is a continuation of that. And, you know, I'm looking through the list of appointees and I have to admit that some of them seem quite reasonable. Idris Jusuf, for example, is now chairperson of Felda. He has experience. He's been at the board of directors in Kadinga. He's been deputy minister of entrepreneurial development and held, you know, several positions in other GLCs like Mara. So I feel that certain... I think, you know, it's not out of question to, appoint MPs who are, I think, qualified and credible to lead GLCs. I mean, Charles Santiago, who headed the National Water Commission, was an MP, but, you know, he had the experience of dealing with issues of sustainability, right, and issues of water resources. So I think there is some sort of justification. If they have the experience, the problem is when you're appointing, almost your entire coalition to become, chairpersons or special diplomatic envoys, then it brings into question, how qualified can every single one of these people be for those specific portfolios, like FAMA, like Felcra, for example. Mm-hmm. What are the chances that they have the necessary experience, I think, is perhaps where, the line needs to be drawn.
Yeah, and at the same time, we're also seeing occurrences where, the GLC was already seemingly under hands of non-politicians, right? And then they were asked or made to relinquish their seats to make way for MPs. So that in itself is a problem. And I think the bar shouldn't be so low, including even during Pakatan's time, where maybe even MPs themselves actually shouldn't be holding those posts at all. You know, if we want to talk about talent development, maybe we should have given it to people who were able to hold these, who weren't politically aligned. But you can let us know. What do you think about the spate of political appointments we're currently seeing? Yes, no, and why? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Lawrence Todd, Director of Research at IDEAS. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:16 on the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Hezril, and we're talking about political appointments in GLCs. There are now 38 MPs, non-cabinet MPs, that have been appointed to key government agencies, GLCs, and diplomatic missions. And we're now going to cross over to Lawrence Todd, Director of Research at IDEAS, to talk a bit more about this. Lawrence, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, good evening.
What's your first impression on the number of MPs that were given special positions?
Well, I think it certainly raises concerns. I think, when we saw the numbers, I think it raises questions about the politicization of these appointments. I think, as you were discussing before the break, actually, that we have to accept that in a parliamentary democracy, building coalitions is part of that. And therefore, that, where do you draw the line between sort of allocating different roles across those politicians who are able to secure a majority? That's always a process that involves some compromise to make democracies work. And as you were saying before the break, also, politicians holding important positions inherently not a bad thing. And in fact, in some cases, it can be a very good thing. It can be important for politicians to helm some of these agencies so they can drive the vision through the current government. But I think that the speed and scale of this round of appointments, combined with the fact that it was taking place during a time when there was question marks over the numbers of MPs that supported the government, and during a time when Parliament wasn't sitting, made it feel like it really stretched the spirit of how these appointments could and should be used. And I think even that's probably a fair and, the fairest interpretation you can give to it. I think, beyond those particulars, I think we have to recognize that this is not a sort of recent problem. This emerges from a sort of complex set of different challenges that Malaysia's political system has that range from our governance of GLCs, the sort of sheer number of those GLCs, but also connects to problems of political financing and the fact that politicians are kind of, in a way, sort of forced to look for these kind of opportunities in order to raise the funds they need to do their work in their constituencies, which has become such a part of what you need to do to be a successful politician in Malaysia. So, you know, and that connects to the depth of and strength of welfare and public services in some parts of the country, and the fact that MPs have to step in to fill that role. So I think this is, you know, part of a kind of complex set of issues, about that emerge from, you know, kind of problems in our political system. But for sure, I think this, the scale and number of appointments without proper scrutiny certainly raises concerns.
Now, what impact could this have on the growth trajectory of GLCs, especially considering that previously there have been MPs who were appointed to head them?
Well, look, I think, you know, it's an interesting question, the growth trajectory of GLCs. I mean, one problem we have in answering that question is it's difficult to exactly say how many GLCs there are. I mean, in fact, even really defining where GLCs begin and the private sector ends is quite complicated and depends what you want to capture in that definition. I mean, we know there are perhaps 150 different statutory bodies, many of which have subsidiaries. I think this is an important thing we need to start talking about, is that the legal, the statutes that established our various statutory bodies provide really sweeping powers to those bodies to incorporate businesses and own property and so on. And that's really what then was used in particularly the 80s and 90s to hugely proliferate the number of subsidiaries under these various statutory bodies, which are quite obscured from real public scrutiny, despite being linked to ultimately back to the public finances through the statutory bodies. So I think we've already seen, you know, we've experienced sort of 30, 40 years of proliferation of the GLCs. I don't see this as fundamentally kind of an acceleration of that. It's just using that system that's emerged over the last few decades, and kind of putting, even quantifying it to be able to say whether it's going to grow or not is difficult, because so much of it is actually obscured from us, because we don't know necessarily how many subsidiaries each body might have and how many subsidiaries their subsidiaries have and so on. So it's a very complex system that's quite hard to capture and quantify in that way.
Well, though, historically then, what were the backgrounds of GLC heads and special appointees in general?
Well, look, I think, you know, we see there's a spectrum. You know, I think you gave us an example, you know, just you before the break of, well, actually, this is a political appointment in some ways, but also one where it feels like there's merit in terms of the experience and qualifications of the appointee. And I think, you know, you can look throughout the last, you know, 30, 40 years and find a sort of spectrum of examples from, you know, frankly, quite underqualified people through to people who may still be politicians, but also look like the right people for the job. In a way, for me, I think the problem we have is that it comes down to the discretion of the government of the day. There isn't checks and balances or institutional mechanisms in place that guarantee or at least try to push the government to always operate towards the kind of more qualified end of the spectrum. So we can always point to examples under different prime ministers of particular appointments and so on. But I think the problem we have is we don't have a system that promotes good appointments in general. And that really comes down to the fact that I think the process for making these appointments is the government really holds all the cards, and there isn't really any institutional check and balance. You know, so for example, in other contexts, you might have hearings, you know, or appointment by a select committee of parliamentary MPs, or at least a hearing to confirm the appointment. But we have nothing like that, so it's simply up to the government. So if they want to find the right guy, then they can do it. But if they don't, they also don't have to. So I think that's the sort of structural problem that needs to be addressed.
Now, given that the Rubber Technology Center has recently made the headlines for, you know, being perhaps somewhat untimely and controversial, what's the typical process needed to actually approve a GLC project?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, you won't be surprised to hear me say that I can't kind of comment on the specifics of that case. You know, I think we're seeing these, you know, various allegations made in the last few, you know, day or so, and I haven't seen a response from the government. But look, I will say that two things. First is that the government does have processes in place to manage this kind of expenditure that, you know, on paper can look quite good. But what we see in general is that there are significant failings in the financial budgetary oversight and in the public procurement system that can lead to abuse, of which this might be an example, right? So actually recently we concluded the assessment of Malaysia's budget against the Open Budget Survey, which sort of benchmarks international governments against transparency and so on. And Malaysia did creep up just 1 point, but, you know, it's still very untransparent in the way it makes financial planning and conducts financial expenditure and in particular public procurement. And really, again, I think the problem is a lack of capacity in this case in the parliament to really hold the government to account and to have to enforce that level of oversight and scrutiny. So, look, I think, again, the particulars, you know, we'll have to see how the story plays out. But I think the general pattern, the sort of structural problem we have is a deep lack of transparency and accountability in public finances and in public procurement in particular, which can lead to these kinds of abuses.
Did the previous Pakatan government make progress on reforms related to political appointments? And, well, on that, where do you see this whole discussion heading towards?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the thing I would say first is that, you know, I speak with politicians, you know, on both sides, and I think there are many politicians that are really committed to reform and see the need and have a high sense of public spirit and duty. And I think they often get stuck in a system that makes reform very difficult. And I'm afraid that's true for Pakatan as it's true for BN and now PN. So with that said, I think I was quite disappointed that Pakatan didn't really succeed in making substantial reforms to the way appointments are made. I think you can have a discussion about the particulars and maybe rack up slightly better numbers for PH, but you can absolutely see the same pattern of appointing politicians or politically relevant people into jobs, including in cases where there weren't clear qualifications for those appointments. And more importantly for me, I think you don't see really serious institutional change to manage the process of appointments. So as I mentioned, some of those issues, you know, select committee hearings and so on. So I think in terms of really making those reforms, I'm afraid that Pakatan did not, I think, progress that agenda. But I think it's important, as I said earlier, that this is not something that can be viewed in isolation. So what Pakatan did do was address what I think are some of the related issues. So firstly is the capacity of Parliament. Now, it's crucial that we have Parliament to hold the government to account, or these kind of abuses are going to get very serious. And Pakatan did establish select committees and did try to strengthen Parliament. And I strongly urge the PN government to continue in that vein. The second thing Pakatan did that I think should be continued that's relevant to this is reform of political financing. Until we have a stable way for MPs to secure income for what they are required to do in their constituencies, then we're going to see, you know, different innovations to try and get that money. And I think we have to have a transparent, accountable and secure political financing mechanism if we're ever going to sort of seriously tackle this issue of GLCs. And in those two areas, you know, political financing and parliamentary reform, Pakatan did, I think, make progress. And I think PN should pick up where Pakatan left off and pursue those reforms and expand on them to address the issue of appointments specifically.
So you've mentioned some reforms. You've mentioned Parliament and the Prime Minister there. But are there any specific parliamentary committees or ministries that will need to get more involved than others in ensuring that these GLC reforms are carried out?
Yeah, well, I think if we focus on Parliament, I think for sure we need to see departmental select committees. So, you know, I mentioned earlier we've got maybe 150 statutory bodies, which is only one subcategory of GLCs. And we have, I think, two select committees, one established, you know, that would have oversight over that, so the Budget Select Committee I'm referring to there. And that just simply does not have the capacity to, say, scrutinize the audit reports of 150 different statutory bodies. It's just not plausible. So for one thing, we need departmental select committees so that there's man marking of each department. You know, particularly I would highlight MRD, which is a a ministry with a lot of important statutory bodies underneath it, and where we see a lot of these appointments, both under PM, but we also saw them under PH. But also those select committees need real capacity. You know, they need budgets to hire researchers and to kind of comb through all the financial reporting that's submitted to them. Because, you know, for example, the statutory bodies are required to submit annual reports and accounts to Parliament, but they don't typically publish them very widely on the website, or at least many don't. But they do submit them to Parliament. But frankly, you know, the parliamentarians just don't have the capacity to kind of comb through all that detail and hold them to account. So we need to equip Parliament to do that job properly. And then we can start to introduce some balance and accountability into the system, which will help to drive reform. So, I mean, that for me would be, you know, the number one thing PM could do. Establish more select committees, give them proper budget, empower them to hold the government to account.
Lawrence, thanks so much for those thoughts.
Thank you.
That was Lawrence Todd, Director of Research at IDEAS, talking to us about political appointments at GLCs. We have the 6:30 news coming up. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.